K-Mud Podcast presents.
Hello, everybody. Today on The Choice Is Yours, got Sheila, Doro, and me, Danny, to talk about coffee this morning.
On our monthly show, we always go into the social, environmental, and health impacts of our consumptions. Because everything we decide to buy or not to buy, to drink, to eat, has impact on the world we live in.
All right. And about coffee, you're going to see that the impacts are global and consequential. So today we're going to talk about deforestation, slavery, the global market, single origin versus commodity. We're going to go from Ethiopia to Brazil and then to your corner roaster store.
And for most of us, coffee is an everyday consumption, for a lot of us at least. And so which coffee should I buy is a very important decision to make.
The good thing is that it may be difficult to make the right choice at first, but once you get the one you like for its taste and for your values, you could just stick to it for years.
Okay, so together we're going to make the effort, we're going to get into it, and get insights on choosing the right coffee for each of us.
All right. So even though coffee comes from Ethiopia originally, it is now grown in all tropical countries.
And that's amazing that coffee is just like wine. It has terroir.
Oh, wow. French girl. Tell us what that actually means.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so terroir. I'm saying it with the French accent.
You better.
Sounds great.
How do you say it with the American accent? Oh, you don't say it.
Terroir.
Terroir.
Well, now I haven't heard you say it. Terrier.
Okay, so terroir. That is the idea that the soil, the water, the terrain, the microclimate of a region gives a special taste to what grows on it. So it means like the coffees that grow in Africa, they are supposed to be bright, acidic, medium body, and fruity.
While the ones from Asia are more earthy and chocolatey, sweet, and heavily bodied.
Yeah, and the ones from the Americas are supposed to be mild and balanced, nutty, spicy, with mild acidity.
And then it gets even more complex than that because there are specificities per country and per region and I'm sure per valley. So they say that coffee from Costa Rica has citrus notes while the ones from Brazil have caramel and the ones from Brazil have chocolate notes. How beautiful is that, huh?
Yes. And it encourages us to really pay attention to the taste, to try and qualify it, just like wine.
Right?
No?
Yeah. We're going to become coffee snobs after that show. I mean, okay, I'm out because I have to say it in the microphone. I am totally out of this question because I don't like coffee. Like, it's disgusting to me. Can you believe that I have never had a coffee in my entire life? Just because the smell and the taste is terrible. But because of that show, last Saturday and today, I tried it.
Yeah, both days we've been with her. To witness.
And now you all get to witness it in your ears, the caffeine surging. See where it takes us.
No, that's the thing is that Saturday, I was on K-Mud from 10 to 12 doing the Ed Denson show. And I had maybe half an hour where I was a little bit like edgy.
Jittery and edgy.
Maybe even irritable and, and kind of over the top excited or something. But it lasted maybe half an hour and that was it. And in the evening, I slept correctly. So it wasn't like a big thing. And this morning, I just drunk it like an hour ago so far. I don't think I feel it much, do I? What? Am I talking to you? What are you saying? What?
Your eyes are twitching.
You're totally normal, Doro. You're totally normal. It's hard to tell with a normally high energy gal.
Exactly.
What's going on?
I want like your energy in my cup of coffee. Absolutely.
So I have to say that before starting the show, I didn't even know what the coffee plant looked like. So I'm thinking maybe I'm not the only one. So we should maybe describe the plant.
Yeah, and then we realized this morning there was a picture of it on the K-Mud coffee blend from Signature.
Coffee.
Like, there's a nice, beautiful picture of the coffee plant on there.
And we were never
like,
paid attention.
I didn't even think we realized what that was.
Wow, I want to check that out.
Yeah. A coffee plant is a tropical evergreen shrub with glossy green leaves that produce small, fragrant white flowers, which then develop into cherries, quote-unquote cherries, which are bright red or yellowish-purple fruits containing two seeds, which one of the coffee beans nestle together inside layers of pulp and skin. And it is the seeds that we roast and grind into the coffee.
Okay, so imagine something similar to the huckleberry that we have here. The cherries are bigger than the huckleberry. In the best cases, they're harvested by hand, only picking the red ones, and then coming back 2 to 3 weeks later to harvest the ones that have turned red recently.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. I see it like beautiful little shrub on the slope of a luxurious mountain. Sun is shining. Nice image.
Yeah,
like
I
it.
Love that. So moving on to, medicinal, like how medicinal coffee has been throughout time. So medicinal coffee has a rich history tracing back to Ethiopia around 575 AD. It was not just a beverage, but a key element in ancient rituals and health practices. In Ethiopia and Yemen, where coffee cultivation began, the seeds and the leaves of the coffee plant were used to relieve fatigue and improve digestion. Ancient healers brewed coffee with spices to create special tonics for various ailments.
In the Islamic world, coffee was praised for its ability to enhance focus and mental clarity, with Sufi monks using it to maintain alertness during spiritual practices.
Wow. Yeah. And the discovery of caffeine in the 19th century led to coffee's integration into several medical applications, including headaches and migraine relief, respiratory conditions, mental health, weirdly, and disease prevention.
As coffee spread globally, particularly in the 17th century, it became a beloved drink celebrated for its health properties. Today, coffee is a morning ritual for millions worldwide and at times a subject of debate among health enthusiasts. Modern research highlights coffee's potential to protect against chronic diseases, boost brain function, and even aid weight management. Yet excessive intake or improper timing can lead to sleep issues, anxiety, or digestive discomfort.
Coffee's reputation as a health-promoting beverage stems from research linking moderate consumption to significant advantages. So these benefits, they can span from our physical health to our mental sharpness and even longevity.
Nice.
So moderate coffee intake is typically defined anywhere from 2 to 5 cups. That's kind of a...
Wait, 2 to 5? Yeah, that's a big range, but also that seems like a lot. 2 to 5 cups a day?
To you, for someone who doesn't drink coffee, once you start going, it's a little easy to put down a couple cups when your tolerance goes down. And
but do you know people who drink more than 5 cups a day?
No.
Not me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember long ago my dad saying he could drink that much, but it didn't lead to him feeling that great.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure there are, depending on people's stress levels and the work they're doing and how trying to keep themselves up, there could definitely be. But that is what in science research today, they qualify as moderate intake.
Wow. And so how do they count? To say 2 to 5 cups.
And that's difficult. Well, because coffee intake varies wildly in preparation methods, strength, and cup size, researchers often convert cups into standardized measurements of caffeine into milligrams. So, for example, defining a standard cup, you know, an 8-ounce cup, the brewing method is also considered. Whether it's drip coffee, it's about 95 milligrams per 8-ounce cup. When it's an espresso, it could be, 640 milligrams per ounce.
So like 6-7 times more than in a drip coffee.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the average American drinks 3 cups a day by that account.
Okay, now I understand better. Okay, 3 cups a day. Like, for example, I'm thinking my husband, he has a thermos that would be 1.5 cups already. And he drinks from the Italian espresso machine, not drip coffee. So maybe his 1.5 cups counts like 3 cups already by that account.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So out there, you're doing your math, counting how many standardized.
How much caffeine you're doing every day.
Yeah. So, for example, studies show coffee's bioactive compounds like chlorogenic acids may improve insulin sensitivity, lowering the risk of type 2 diabetes by up to 30%. And regular coffee drinkers have a 25 to 60% lower risk of developing Parkinson's due to caffeine's neuroprotective effect. Research also linked coffee to a reduced risk of liver, colon, throat, mouth, and endometrial cancers. That's amazing. With the antioxidants playing a key role in fighting the oxidative stress.
Coffee's protective effects can extend to vital organs, offering promising benefits for cardiovascular and liver function. A 2025 study found that morning coffee consumption correlates with a 10 to 15% lower risk of heart disease mortality. As far as liver goes, coffee may reduce the risk of cirrhosis and liver cancer, particularly in those with chronic liver conditions, up to 70%. It's pretty good.
And caffeine, which is coffee's most famous component, is a powerful stimulant that enhances brain function. That's why I feel so sharp this morning. Coffee has been associated with improved focus and mood. Caffeine blocks adenosine receptors, increasing alertness and improving reaction time.
Not bad. A study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found that older adults who consumed unsweetened black coffee had lower risk of Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and related dementia. Specifically, those who drank unsweetened coffee had 30% lower risk compared to non-coffee drinkers.
Wow. Another benefit of coffee is that it may boost your metabolism. So caffeine can increase metabolism and suppress appetite temporarily, aiding in weight control efforts. But remember, all the additives that, you know, adding a lot of sugar may negate these benefits.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. In my coffee this morning, like, because I don't like the taste that much, I had to add a lot of sugar. So I don't know if now I'm high on sugar or coffee. Like, I don't know.
Hard to tell the difference.
So while coffee offers impressive benefits, it's not without drawbacks. All right. Particularly when consumed in excess and by sensitive individuals. Caffeine stimulating effects can backfire, especially for those prone to anxiety or poor sleep.
Yeah. High doses can definitely trigger nervousness, restlessness, or a racing heart. There was a 2023 meta-analysis that recommended avoiding coffee within 8 hours of going to bed to prevent sleep disturbances.
Coffee's acidity and stimulating properties can also irritate the digestive system for some. Coffee increases stomach acid, potentially causing indigestion or acid reflux in sensitive individuals. And those with irritable bowel syndrome may find coffee exacerbates these systems.
Yeah, and preparation methods do matter. When it comes to our health, so there's deterpenes in unfiltered coffee. That's French press or espresso that can contain compounds that may raise LDL cholesterol, increasing heart disease risk. Paper filters remove most deterpenes, making drip coffee a safer choice. That's just, you know, for those who might already be struggling with high cholesterol mm-hmm. and are finding ways to cut things out.
That's amazing. And the choice between filtered or unfiltered coffee ultimately depends on personal taste preferences and those health considerations that Sheila just talked about. Filtered coffee is ideal for those seeking a lighter, cleaner cup, while unfiltered coffee, meaning the ones from the French press or the espresso, that appeals to those who enjoy a richer, most robust flavor.
And this is probably a good time to interject the common misconception of darker roasts being more caffeinated. Yeah. But mm-hmm. really, a light roast has more caffeine because the beans have been less treated by the heat. And so if you are looking for something that is less caffeinated, you can go towards a dark roast.
All right. Thanks for that.
Yeah. And it is also generally advised to lower the intake of coffee to 2 cups, which is less than 200 milligrams daily if you are pregnant. High caffeine intake during pregnancy may increase risks of miscarriage or low birth rate.
Coffee's addictive potential and varying effects highlight the need for our personalized consumption. You know, some genetic factors can influence how individuals metabolize caffeine, with some experiencing stronger effects or side effects. Withdrawal symptoms can also occur if you cut back or then just cut it out completely after regular intake. This can lead to headaches, fatigue, or irritability.
Moderation is really key to balancing the benefits and the risks. Up to 400 milligrams of caffeine daily. This comes to about 4 8-ounce cups of coffee daily, and it's considered safe for most adults. Drinking coffee in the morning aligns with the body's circadian rhythm, minimizing sleep disruption.
Also, beware of how much you add to your coffee, because like we said before, the excessive addition of sugary syrup, whipped cream, high-fat milk, or whatever you put in there, or those flavors maybe also.
Oh, yeah, those syrups and stuff. Yeah,
that can turn a healthy drink into a calorie-laden treat that may actually diminish your energy.
Yeah, I think as we're saying, like everything in moderation, like touch it up a little bit if you need. And definitely be aware that decaffeinated coffee does retain the antioxidants, you know, if you want to experience some of the health benefits of coffee without feeling overstimulated. Really, it comes down to listening to your own body. Some of us can handle coffee and some of us can't. So definitely be aware of how it affects your energy, your mood, and your digestion.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee is indigenous to Ethiopia, where it still grows wild in ancient forests. Eventually, it made its way to the southern Arabian Peninsula through the port of Al-Mocha. While this exact export story is ripe with speculation, many historians believe slaves brought seeds in the form of coffee cherries as a food source on the boat. It is certain that modern Yemen is where coffee was first commercially grown.
And by the 15th century, it was the most popular beverage in the region, served at coffee houses to local merchants and Venetian traders. News of this magical brew soon spread around the world, percolating huge global demand.
Arabia became fiercely protective of the crop, prohibiting trade of its seeds, and even requiring all beans be boiled before export to ensure their infertility. This coffee monopoly was maintained by the Ottoman Empire until the late 1600s, when the Dutch stole viable seeds, smuggling them out of Yemen for cultivation in their Indonesian colonies.
And the coffee seeds landed on the island of Java, where the Deutsch quickly established vast plantations using stolen land and an indented Javanese workforce. The labor was brutal, with human death considered an acceptable cost of production. Entire villages perished from starvation as a direct result of treatment by the Deutsch.
By the mid-1700s, other European powers were acutely aware of coffee's profitability. As demand soared beyond what the Dutch Indonesia could supply, British, French, and Spanish Portuguese colonists joined the trade. These global powers took both plants and people from West Africa, shipping slaves like cargo to establish plantations in the Caribbean and Americas.
And then by 1788, half of the world's coffee came from African slave labor in French-occupied Haiti. Conditions there were marked by a combination of torture, malnutrition, overwork, and unsanitary living quarters. The idea was to grow the crop as cheaply as possible at the expense of human life.
Meanwhile, Portuguese colonized Brazil quickly gained momentum as a leading coffee producer. By the early 18th century, Brazil accounted for 30% of the world production of coffee, all of which was grown on the back of 2 million people stolen from Africa.
And from time of bondage, the average life expectancy of a coffee slave in Brazil was a mere 7 years.
What?
Likely because it was widely acknowledged among plantation owners that importing new slaves after they died from overwork was cheaper than providing the necessary conditions for keeping them alive.
Oh, my God.
So cruel.
The system lasted until 1888, which was 3 years after the United States legally abolished the practice of owning human beings.
More than 600 years later, the system looks different on the surface, but shockingly little has changed. Following in the legacy of colonialism, people of color continue to be the industry's backbone, providing labor and wealth-generating coffee beans with little to no compensation. The gap between the haves and the have-nots continue to widen in the coffee industry, with an apparent racial and ethnic divide separating the two.
In 50 countries across Africa, South America, and Asia, 125 million people depend on coffee for their livelihood. Of that group, 71% live in poverty or extreme poverty. For small coffee producers, those numbers are close to 100% living in poverty. Virtually all are black or indigenous, at least people of color, let's say.
Even more overt modern-day slavery is pervasive across the industry and especially prevalent in Brazil. The situation doesn't seem to be improving despite product certifications. In fact, in 2014, labor officials have led 25 investigations into forced labor and other human rights violations in Brazil's coffee sector. And experts widely acknowledge the number of reports are small compared to the actual scale.
Child labor is similarly exploited in coffee, with Brazil again assuming the role of the worst offender. A recent study found exploitation rates of child labor to be 37% higher in Brazil than in other coffee-producing countries, with children as young as 6 years old working 10-hour days while suffering exposure to health and safety risks. This is especially notable remembering Brazil's history of slavery, which was the defining factor in its rise to coffee domination. Today, Brazil remains the biggest and the most influential producer of coffee in the world, reaping significant profits for large plantation owners and associated companies.
So Brazil is different from the rest of the world due to the size of its exploitation. Many farms are on relatively flat terrain, which is different, which allows for widespread use of machinery for planting, irrigation, and harvesting. This large-scale, tech-forward approach contrasts sharply with other regions where geography makes it this very difficult.
In many other coffee-producing countries like Colombia or Kenya, coffee is often grown on steep mountainous hillsides, making large-scale mechanization impossible. Production is generally dominated by smaller, family-owned farms that rely on manual labor for selective hand-picking of coffee cherries.
And the majority of Brazilian coffee, that's another difference. It's dry-processed, which is the natural method, where the whole coffee cherry is allowed to dry in the sun before the bean is extracted. Brazil's climate, with a distinct dry season, is ideal for this method, which conserves the water and results in a full-bodied, sweet coffee with notes of chocolate and nuts, like we said before.
In most other countries, especially in regions with more consistent rainfall or higher humidity, primarily use the wet processing, the washed method. This involves removing the fruit pulp before drying and fermentation, typically yielding a coffee with the brighter acidity and a cleaner, crisper flavor profile.
And a higher cost, too, right?
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at kmud.org.
So today we are talking about coffee.
Yes. The global coffee trade depends on two species, the Arabica, which makes up about 60% of traded coffee, and Robusta, which makes up the remaining 40%, even though the taxonomy of the genus Coffea presents 130 species and 7 intraspecific taxa.
Wow, so that's incredible that only 2 varieties are grown.
Right, wow. Totally, because as we know, we've talked about it in other shows, this is never a good idea for biodiversity and resistance to pests. But well, okay, tell us, Danny, what is the difference between the two?
Okay, so Arabica is more delicate. It needs higher altitudes, rich soil, specific climates, and it's harder to grow. And Robusta is hardy, resilient to pests and disease, and grows in lower altitudes and hotter climates, easier to farm. But Robusta is more bitter and doesn't fit all the palates. But because it is easier and cheaper to produce, it's usually what is used in the blends.
Wait, talking about blends and stuff, I wanted to recommend. So I've been listening a lot to a podcast called Adventures in Coffee, if you're into podcast. And if you're into coffee, that's like amazing, all the episodes they have just about coffee. And there's one that was very touching that's called Ethiopia's Gift to the World. And they really go into the tradition of how to drink coffee in Ethiopia up to today. Like the fact that the woman prepare it, it's like their rest time during the day where women gather together to drink the coffee, and it takes can take 3 hours when they have time, and the way they it's beautiful. Ooh. There's really like a ceremony of coffee in Ethiopia.
I love that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I'm going to listen to that episode.
Yeah. Okay. So globally, the industry of coffee is valued at more than $200 billion. However, less than 10% of that number stays in producing countries. Big surprise.
Wow.
And only 5 to 7% makes it to the farmers themselves. Much of the rest goes to, guess it, the wealthy companies and their executives who are almost exclusively based in North America and Europe.
Wow. So 50% of the total is produced by Brazil and Vietnam, the two main producing countries. But then who consumes it? We do. I guess. So 90% is consumed by the United States and Europe. And now Doro.
Adding to the count.
Adding to the numbers.
Most of us buy our coffee beans in the supermarkets, but it would be fair to distinguish that from what we buy at the coffee shop, which is roasted in the past few days by a professional roaster, picking their producers and making their own blends. Anyway, so I was saying that in this show, we'll be talking more about the supermarket coffee, not so much the coffee shop coffee, right? Because nearly 80% of Americans consume at least one cup of coffee a day at home.
Okay, and which brands would you say are America's top-selling ground coffee brands? And which is more than half of the biggest retail coffee market?
Wait, let them think and say that we're going to do a second show about coffee next month.
Yes.
Where we'll talk more about the coffee shop side of the business.
Yeah. There's definitely a part two to this.
Yeah.
There's so much information.
And like the coffee corporations, big business, Starbucks, yep. Folgers, all these things.
Yeah. So, okay. Ground coffee.
All right.
The two biggest brands, what do you think they are?
I don't know what they are, but I bet it's going to be terrifying.
Okay, okay. So it's Folgers and Dunkin's.
Okay.
And please stay tuned to hear why this is so problematic. But first, we are going to move on and talk about the environmental impacts of coffee.
Yeah, okay. You know, the main thing to remember is that coffee production is fragile. And the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, reports that indicates that climate change in the very near future will reduce worldwide yield on average and decrease coffee suitable land by 2050. Like we're talking like soon.
Really soon. Already climate catastrophes are starting in the last years to devastate coffee plantations. Up to 50% of the El Salvador production, for example, because of an outbreak of leaf rust fungus. This is known as La Roya, combined with deforestation and rising average temperatures and humidity.
Yeah, so El Salvador takes the first hit, but who's next? Well, to understand this crop's impact on the environment, we need to make the distinction between shade-grown coffee plantation and sun-grown.
So shade-grown coffee has benefits all across the board for a small producer. Really, the only reason for coffee farms to not be shade-grown is if it is a large plantation that uses mechanical harvesting.
Yeah, so shade is great because it keeps the coffee at a lower average temperature, which means slower development of the cherries and higher bean density.
But it also prevents frost, which may be vital in the higher elevation farms. They also prevent sunspotting and keep the coffee trees from getting too hot.
And if farmers use legume trees, they are essentially getting free fertilizer for their coffee because they fix nitrogen. This cuts down on fertilizer inputs and costs. Also, the leaves from the trees create a lot of ground cover, which means less weeding and more fertile soil. And then farmers can use shade trees like macadamia, avocado, citrus, and others to create another revenue stream for themselves.
Yes, so shade-grown coffee plantations are a sustainable system that may provide several ecological services, like we were saying, maintaining the soil fertility, biodiversity, carbon sequestration, regulating pest and disease.
All sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the spectrum, you've got sun-grown coffee. It is planted in open fields for higher, faster output, but requires more chemicals, causes erosion, and yields harsher beans, making shade-grown the traditional sustainable choice and sun-grown the intensive modern alternative with significant environmental trade-offs.
Okay, you got me. Now we all want to go to shade-grown coffee. Can we find that? Like, is it written on the labels?
It's not, but bird-friendly coffee certification gets pretty close.
Okay, so check out this website that is listing all common migratory bird species that depend on coffee-growing landscapes in the tropics for survival. So on the website, which is part of the Smithsonian, somehow you can buy your bird-friendly certified coffees or find the store that sells them.
Oh my God, I love it. Consuming coffee to help birds. Okay, so I don't know if it's a little bit of greenwashing or not, because you just never know those days. But it's just a cool idea, right?
Yeah, it's really great. So the website is nationalzoo.si.edu. And you can find it by typing in buy bird friendly coffee.
Some specialty coffees specify that they are shade grown, but you can also go per country. Even though no countries grow only shade grown coffee, there are several nations in which the vast majority of their coffee is shade grown. For example, Ethiopia, Peru, Guatemala, and parts of Mexico, Sumatra, and India.
While countries like Brazil, Colombia, and Costa Rica often focus on sun grown methods, they also have shade grown producers. There are numerous certification schemes in coffee. Unfortunately, to date, these platforms and certifications have failed to address key sustainability issues in the coffee industry. For example, these platforms do not require member companies to commit to paying a living wage to their coffee farm workers or to a deforestation-free supply chain, let alone a path to net zero or nature positive.
Fairtrade does take some steps to make coffee a bit more fair for farmers and pushes for a degree of social responsibility and better working conditions. But unfortunately, by their own admission, they do not guarantee a living income price for farmers or fair wages to farm workers.
You know, I heard on my favorite French environmental podcast that in Europe, we can trust our Fairtrade logo, but the U.S. Fairtrade logo cannot be trusted.
Typical.
I know. Sorry. It's such a shame.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. So this is a fun little side tangent about civet coffee.
What?
Which is also known as kopi luwak or poop coffee. And it is
Wait,
made
say it again?
That's poop when
it,
coffee.
You get your shoulders going up when you say that.
It's poop just a little coffee. Poop. You just in your coffee. It's nice. You want it there. It's made using coffee cherries that have been eaten and excreted by civets, which are very cute, by the way. We looked them up.
They're
like
yeah.
a very interesting combination
yeah,
of
check
animals.
Them out.
It's like kind of a rodent
C-I-V-E-T.
And a jaguar.
Yeah, it's a civet.
Wait. Just because it's cute, now you want to eat what comes
out of
that?
I want to eat it more than if it was like another animal. I'm curious. I'm civet poop curious. So it's a small natural nocturnal mammal that's native to Asia. And while marketed as a rare delicacy, most civet coffee today comes from civets kept in small cages and force-fed cherries, leading to extreme stress, illness, and shortened lifespans.
So in contrast then, elephants in India, they're not part of coffee production, but they face a growing risk as coffee farms expand into their natural habitat. And when they damage crops or property, they are then captured and confined by authorities.
So I would recommend you look into your favorite brand and try and find out more info about it.
Yeah. So, for example, I looked into the one that my husband buy and found a certification on there that I didn't know. Maybe you have it on your coffee. It's called Enveritas. So I looked into it and discovered that this is an international nonprofit who assesses the coffee farmers and help them to meet the sustainability standard.
Okay, so they say that an adequate number per hectare, 2.5 acres of suitable shade trees are planted and then maintained on coffee plots. And then the surrounding biodiversity is protected by the presence of buffer zones. And then there's set asides for conservation.
Okay, so once again, we cannot be sure that it is not greenwashing, but okay, I did spend some time looking into that website and comments on the Enveritas certification, and I didn't find anything bad about them. They're kind of new, but they seem to be better than other certifications, and it seems like now they are on all the Costco packets and the Pete's Coffee.
Mm. Okay.
So that's kind of large, right? That's a lot of coffee with that thing.
And here's what some other organizations say about Enveritas. Unlike traditional certifications, Enveritas focuses on a more inclusive approach by working directly with coffee farmers, regardless of their size and location. The goal of Enveritas is to assess and improve the social, environmental, and economic conditions of coffee farming communities worldwide, particularly those that are overlooked by conventional certification programs.
Oh, yeah. So, it's not only about environment. You know, it also includes several factors like no child labor, quite an important one, no forced labor, minimum wage respected, and other social commitments. So it's quite cool.
Okay, and as we were saying, look into your favorite coffee brand, look at the certification logos that it has, and then see for yourself if this is a sustainable choice for you.
Spoiler alert, though, the most sold brands in the States, Folger, Dunkin's, Maxwell, Keurig, you know, the cups, all of them have no certifications whatsoever. And to me, that says they don't even want to try to be more sustainable.
Yeah, they're not thinking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, and we have a caller.
All right, let's take it now. Hello, caller.
Hello, good morning. Hey. If I buy what's called fair trade coffee, does that mean it's probably not using slave labor? Do we know that? Or what other thing would I need to do?
Well, so what we were saying earlier is that, unfortunately, the fair trade U.S. certification is not trustworthy. So that's what it's supposed to mean. Yes, no child labor and minimum wage for the workers. But actually, it may not be that true. But you know what? Like, for me, that would be like for the organic certification. It may not be perfect. But I'm hoping that even if that means that it's only true at, whatever, 70%. Well, it's already great. It may not be 100% no child abuse or whatever, but
it's better than the ones that don't say that.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it's moving in the right direction. So I thank you for your program, and I will go that way because we have to keep it moving in the right direction. And
there you go. We keep doing our best.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe just the fact that nowadays we talk about fair trade, maybe we're not at the final point yet of that certification, of those programs, of the way it's done. But the fact that we talk about it, I mean, in the 80s, that was not even in the thoughts of the producers or the consumers. So let's keep talking about it.
And demanding that it be refined. We can get some more legislation that's actually giving people what they think that they're purchasing when they see fair trade on their products.
Yeah.
And if we all are not consuming brands that, you know, don't have those logos or don't stand
it might force
for ethical practices.
Yeah.
So that's our, as consumers, that's how we make the difference.
Right.
But the choice is yours.
Yeah. The choice is yours.
Don't choose Folgers. It's your choice, but we're telling you what to do.
Yeah. Sorry.
Listen up.
I gotta control myself.
But I agree. So let's talk about Brazil for a minute because it is the world's biggest coffee producer. And in Brazil, coffee farming is driving deforestation, and that in turn makes coffee harder to grow.
More than 1,200 square miles of forest were cleared for coffee cultivation in Brazil's coffee growing areas between 2001 and 2023, according to a new report from the group Coffee Watch. The group used satellite images, government land use data, and a forest loss alert system in its analysis.
They say, to be clear, coffee is not the leading cause of deforestation in Brazil. Cattle ranching is responsible for a far larger share, but coffee's role in deforestation has not been talked about enough.
Conventionally grown coffee is one of the most chemically treated beverages on the market, which may be why those conventional brands don't want any logo on their bags.
Yeah, right.
So consumers and farmers' exposure to pesticides can be hazardous to human health, like always, with short and long-term effects.
Yeah, for example, a 2013 study by Danish reporters in Brazil found traces of 24 different pesticides in the waterways near the plantations. And not only are these very likely to be carcinogenic to humans, they are extremely toxic to aquatic life as well.
Mm. It takes a gigantic amount of water to make coffee, from irrigating plants to processing and washing coffee and coffee wet milling. The Water Footprint Network estimates the global average water footprint for a single 125 milliliter cup of coffee to be about 140 liters, 60
yeah.
gallons or
60
something.
60 gallons per cup of coffee.
That's insane.
Whoa.
More than the water used in a 16-minute shower. And this was corroborated by a 2003 UNESCO study.
Wow. Okay. And last but not least, packaging, like always. So packaging can account for nearly one-third of average coffee companies' carbon emissions, from coffee bags to primary, secondary, or tertiary packaging, as well as coffee, the capsules, the pods, few of which are recyclable or recycled. And we're definitely going to talk more about that during our next show.
And the cups, obviously, right? Billions of coffee cups are thrown away annually worldwide, with only a tiny fraction of which that are recycled, with plastic-coated cups polluting landfills, oceans, and waterways.
You know, when I was working for KMED and I was part of the coffee booth organizations with Kate. Hey, Kate.
Hey, Kate.
We know you're listening. We did spend a lot of energy trying to find the right cups to sell our KMED coffee at the festivals. And we ended up, we had to buy the paper cups because there was no transparent plastic cup that would be kind of sustainable. So we went to plastic cups. Okay, you're not going to see through. But they still had a coating inside that is not great, but at least we found one that had no BPA. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of okay. That was the best we could do, apparently. But that's crazy to me that in 2026, there's not a better product than that.
Yeah.
Like,
come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
2026, people.
Some great mind out there.
Yeah.
Just make it a good coffee cup for the environment.
Yeah, we need a good cup. Come on.
It's a good staple of America.
Yes.
We can do it.
Cece, would you have a little fast percentage? How many people arrive at the coffee shop with their thermos to not use a cup? I'm sorry to ask you like that on the...
Give us a percentage.
I would say maybe like 10%.
Oh, 10 to 20%
customers.
Oh, you're thinking it's a lot, Sheila?
I was thinking it would be a lot.
No.
It's 10%. No. Yeah. I'm thinking in Humboldt County, it would be a
people
lot.
People have a thermos on
no,
them.
Most people
don't.
They get plastic or paper cups.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
See, heard, right? That's a big scoop.
Yeah.
It is.
So that's got to be one of our takeaways from this.
Take your thermos to go to the
coffee
shop.
Yeah, maybe once in a while you forget the thermos or something.
Sure.
But for the most part.
And once in a while you lose it.
Hey, and that's a great gift to people. And you know what? Maybe KMUD could, we should make some KMUD.
Thermos.
I think there are some KMUD cups, but like gift your friend.
Yes, it's a good
mine
one.
Was a gift given to me and I treasure it.
And it's kind of a habit. Of course, I have lost thermos like everybody else, but the one I have now, for example, I must have had it for 3 years. So I'm guessing that, because, I'm French. I'm not used to have a thermos with me, but now I've been in the U.S. for 8 years, so I've taken the habit. And by now I do have the habit. I don't lose my thermos every mm-hmm. other day. Like, I've had it for a while.
Yeah.
So take the habit, people. It's worth it because mm-hmm. one plastic cup a day per person, that's just too much. Too much. Don't do it.
And I guess I would say this because I have been turned away when I've brought glass jars in to fill with coffee out of the chance that it might break. But I mean, it depends on the cafe you're going into. Some might fill a glass jar, but, you know, definitely these.
So have multiple containers in your car at all times, basically. It's a short story. But yeah, keep an extra thermos in your car.
Yeah, and if you have a paper cup, reuse that one.
Yeah.
Okay, as a short little conclusion, which coffee should we buy? The sad truth is that today there is no easy way to guarantee that your coffee is free from deforestation or human or animal rights abuses. Sorry. But there is a lot you can do to buy responsible and lean into, or at least somewhat, more responsible coffee production. Researching your coffee helps.
Yeah. And so here are some things that you can do to find the most responsibly produced coffee.
Look for shade-grown or agroforestry or the Smithsonian bird-friendly or even Rainforest Alliance certifications, although the latter is not as good or ambitious as the standard as the Smithsonian certification.
Another key path to sustainability is drinking coffee that explicitly guarantees the farmers are earning a living income price or a living wage.
You can also look at something called Combi Certified Coffee. That's like, for example, the best combination would be Smithsonian and Living Wage. That would be great. The second best combination would be Rainforest Alliance and Fair Trade. The third best, maybe, okay, that would be Organic and Rainforest or Organic and Fair Trade.
It's usually a good idea to buy coffee that is organically produced or made with fewer chemicals. You can buy organic certified coffee to solve this particular problem. And the Smithsonian Bird Friendly certification actually covers organic already. But roughly speaking, Fair Trade gets a B or B plus on pesticides, and Rainforest Alliance probably gets a B minus on pesticides. So it's all a lot better than an F, but it's not great.
Yeah, we still have some work to do.
Yeah.
Buying organic coffee means that you ensure a number of environmental considerations. For example, protection against the use of pesticides and synthetic fertilizers. Unfortunately, organic doesn't look at deforestation or slavery or other abuses.
Okay, so if you buy coffee, best one would be direct trade, shade grown, zero deforestation, organic, living income for the farmers.
If you drink this coffee, call in next week or next month and let us know what brand.
Part two, we're going to dive into way more of this.
The choice
is yours.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.